the stack of Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we've all been through an extensive vocal training.
I've been through an extensive holiday training. We have been away from the Stack podcast for a good long time. Very excited to chat with you fellas about the old comic books after such a long time.
Not just fellas.
What?
What?
Huh? Did you say fellas?
Yeah, I said fellas.
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 And ladies.
Yeah, with you fellas. You, yeah, Justin, you're a fella. Pete
did
is
you
a
have
fella.
An operation while over the break?
To be revealed soon.
What a podcast. What a time to be alive. On the Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out today. We're going to have one advanced preview for you as well. But let's jump into it. Big title coming out of Marvel, Captain Marvel number one. Now, this is, I guess, kind of a continuation of the run that's already been going on. But it is a reboot to tie it to the movie and bring in new readers and give a fresh start for Captain Danvers?
Yeah, Carol, cool. Carol Danvers.
Captain Carol Danvers. I suddenly got very nervous because of Kara Danvers on Supergirl, and I was like, oh, God, has it been so long? Have I gotten it wrong?
Yeah, no.
But I think this is a great new entry point for readers. How'd you guys feel about the book?
I loved
so
it.
Light in the new year.
I thought
we did a whole podcast without you, and we wanted to. We've been trying to embrace a new, turn over a new leaf, as it were.
Yeah, I thought it was a solid first issue start. You know, anytime you start with a giant alien monster, I say fantastic. Yeah, I think it was a good number one issue. Really set up this world. Set up a little love interest style.
Yeah, this is interesting. You guys might be interested. It sets up a world called the Marvel Universe.
Yeah,
this is
fine.
A new thing.
It's great to set it up.
Yeah.
It's great to set it up.
I'm excited to see what happens. What kind of men and spiders will they have in there?
Yeah, exactly.
Will they bring them together?
There was a kind of a douchey character that reminded me of Justin a little bit.
Who is that?
Dresses similar.
Tony Stark?
Nuclear man.
I don't dress. I look nothing like
you always are shirtless with a fur coat on.
That's true. I guess that's the 2019 me, for those of you that haven't seen the pictures. I am basically a Russian bear.
Yep. How did you feel about this?
I thought it was great. I will say I feel like the trope of fighting a monster in the first issue has been done a lot in the past year.
Sure.
You tired of that start?
Yeah, I'm tired of it.
Oh,
I've seen
man,
it.
I've
seen people because it's also tonally the same where it's like, man, where'd this monster come from? And they're not scared. They're sort of like joking around whoever the heroes are fighting.
Right.
So I was like, I feel that. I see it. That's good. I'm good on that.
Well, what I was looking forward to, and this is very much a first issue, so we'll see how this pans out. If that ends up coming back around in the story in some way, I would appreciate that a lot, and I think that would explain the opening monster of it all.
Right.
But that's essentially to establish a couple of things, and this issue establishes... I'll go ahead and spoil just the general gist of it, but I definitely recommend you read it because it's very quippy and very funny.
Yeah,
there are jokes, tons of jokes on the page, but it's establishing the relationship of Jessica Drew, Spider-Woman, and Captain Marvel, best friends, because that's going to pan out in a big way. At the end of the issue, Captain Marvel is seemingly set to do some sort of post-apocalyptic future or
not
something
great.
Like that, where the characters that we meet over the course of the book are all teaming together. We don't know why, but I thought it was a fun introduction. I was very unexpected.
Yeah, I will say when I have seen the monster trope before, but it built sort of is sequence by sequence into like a very original take that I really liked. Moving through the conversation with Tony Stark that she has and the use of hazmat in this issue, I thought was
love
really great.
Hazmat.
Love hazmat. I love sort of pulling a deep continuity character back into the fold, have a little maybe mentor-mentee relationship
Ooh.
There. You know
Look
what I'm talking
at
about?
You word a day calendar.
We are 8 days into 2019, and I'm using every word I have learned.
Well, here's two words you may not have learned yet: Young and Justice.
Oh,
because we're going to talk about the kickoff of Wonder Comics over
what
at DC.
What is Young?
Young
we
means.
Are.
I don't know. Pete, do you know what young means?
Nope.
Yeah, let's talk to the youngest, freshest member of our trio, Pete LePage.
Oh, boy. So this is the kickoff of Wonder Comics, which is Brian Michael Bendis' new imprint from DC Comics. Young Justice, number one, bringing the classic team back together. Also very coincidentally tied to the new season of Young Justice launching on DC Universe. Probably a total coincidence there.
I love when coincidences like that happen.
Are you guys fans of this? Were you excited to see the team back together? How'd you feel about this kickoff of an entire line?
I like Young Justice. I like Impulse.
What?
I feel like you're being cagey right now.
I am not. I do. I legitimately do.
But I feel like you're holding back on something.
No, not at all. Not at all. Bendis's work in the DC universe I have not loved so far. And I think this feels like it is a new start for him in the DC universe. It feels like this is in his wheelhouse and he can just hit the ground running like Impulse does. And I love the last page reveal. This is a fun, fun issue.
Pete, how'd you feel about this?
I disagree. This is just annoying. It's a lot of like...
He hates young people.
Yeah, it's a lot of young people.
Like him.
Yeah, yeah.
You want Old Injustice is the book you're looking for, yeah. too. Which is about you, basically.
When it's just, I don't know, it's just a lot of young kids running around. I don't mean to sound old. I was excited about Jenny.
Can't help it.
Jenny Hex. I thought that was cool.
Jenny Hex, great.
That was...
So the idea of the book is Jenny Hex, his younger female version of Jonah Hex, shows up in Metropolis looking for Superman. We're not quite sure what's going on with her yet. She ends up teaming up with the members of Young Justice who gather one after the other to fight this invasion from Gemworld. There's kind of an interesting twist there where the people of Gemworld are pissed off because Earth has been through 7 crises, and every time something happens on Earth, it changes the entire universe.
Yeah.
So they're getting revenge for that. I got to tell you, I had a hard time maybe getting past my expectations for the book.
Interesting.
Because looking at the cover, knowing it's Young Justice, seeing everybody surprised and happy and jumping off the cover, seeing that it's called Wonder Comics, knowing that this is supposed to be the kickoff of a YA/teen line, I thought, oh, great. Okay, this is going to be like an all ages fun. Right for the first page.
Not.
No, it definitely isn't.
I agree with
you. Lots of cursing in this issue.
Yes. I agree with you. It is sort of a misdirect.
Right.
I don't know if that's a purposeful thing.
Well, I think the argument could be made that, and Pete, as our resident teen, you could probably speak to this, but teens curse, I think. I'm hearing that now.
That's
I'm getting
cool,
that from the news.
Yeah, Pete, get off that skateboard and start talking about the teen line.
Turn your hat back the right way, Pete.
Never. Never.
So I get that, and I understand that, and I understand that was my own personal barrier to get past.
Yeah.
But through the dialogue and through Impulse, who I also really enjoy, the new Green Lantern kid. Kid Lantern. Also
out.
A really fun idea. There's a lot of mysteries that are being set up here, which I think are a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. Teen Lantern.
Teen Lantern. Thank you. The dialogue and the thrust of the plot seemed very young and all ages to me, but a lot of the language being used seemed to be much older than that. So I wasn't quite sure what audience this was necessarily going for.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't feel like I was the audience, so I didn't really have a good time with this book, but by the title, I knew I was going to have a good time. So
judging a book by its cover.
Yeah, I did.
Very youthful thing to do. Pete, quit vaping and let's move on to the next book.
All right, here we go. Criminal Number One from Image Comics. Finally, it is back. The award-winning, critically acclaimed crime anthology is back. It's very exciting. I know you're a big fan, Justin, so I'll turn it over to you. How'd you feel about this?
I love Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips working together. Every book they do is great. I don't know if I could point to a book that it has been bad that they have worked on. Really loved Kill or Be Killed, and they seem genuinely excited to be back on Criminal. It feels like sort of their home universe, if you will. And we start sort of a little bit further away from our main character and get closer as the story goes on. I don't want to spoil too much, but the first half of the book, I was great. A story about a diamond heist and the repercussions of a diamond heist and a mistaken identity. It was great. And then we follow it through.
Yeah.
You're a big fan of splitting things in half. He was talking about the first half versus the second half. What are your thoughts on that?
I really thought the way the directions the story went in were really interesting and surprising. It was not what I expected at all. But I think to your point, it's tough almost to say anything about the Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips
thing. That's what I'm saying.
Because they're all so good.
Yeah.
And you know what you're getting into. You know you're going to get into an original, interesting, engrossing crime story that quickly establishes the characters and the stakes of what's going on. It's not going to feel like anything else on the stands. That's what you get.
Exactly. People are not nice in these books. They make mistakes. You are in their heads. You see why they make them. You hear them making the mistakes, and you can't help but go along for the ride while also regretting at the same time. It's a great feeling. I love it.
Okay. So The art is amazing. I know the stories are fantastic, but the problem I have with this is you've got a douche kid in the beginning who's being a real asshole, and then you get the main character who we follow the rest of the way is a complete dick. So it's like, who am I rooting for?
It's dick on dick.
Do I want them to lose? It's a little like I liked the story was cool. It was very engrossing, and it was a quick read because it sucks you into this world so well. But the problem is I'm rooting against the main characters.
But I think you're supposed to be. I don't think you're supposed to be rooting for them to win or really get out of this mess.
But if you don't like them, it's hard. I mean, there's so many books on the shelves. It's like, am I going to go back to this just because the team is so amazing? I guess we have to, but I don't know, man. I'm not like excited about it.
Nobody has to do anything, Pete. I think what I find interesting about this is being able to read flawed, unique characters.
Exactly.
And I can't predict what direction the narrative is going to go in. So I get that.
Which is
awesome.
You're
not supposed to like it, but it's refreshing to read something like that. It's difficult to read sometimes because you want them to make the heroic decisions, but I'll give you a little clue that they're not going to. The title of the book is Criminal.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
And I think they're going to act like
that. Get down in the dirt with us, Pete. Be fly. I mean, you're too young to like make mistakes, but you're going to someday in your life, and you're going to really be able to understand where these characters are coming from.
Oh, man. I missed that period up until age 18 when I never made mistakes.
Exactly. There were no consequences. Now, any misstep on this podcast, and we're fucked.
Speaking of which, let's move on to a book from Dark Horse Comics coming out January 16th. We're not going to do any spoilers about this one because it is pretty in advance. I'm not going to pronounce this correctly, but Avatar Tsutsui's Path?
Pretty good. Ooh,
sure,
pretty
good. Why not? So this
Tsutsui's? That's how I would.
This is a side story showing other events that went on during the movie Avatar by James Cameron. Now, of course, we all remember exactly what happened to Avatar.
I know, 'cause I don't know if it was a movie from a few years back. So I did some research, and these are the characters. These are what happened. It's like that. This is like that.
Yeah, this is like that, but it's a comic book.
That's my review.
Right.
I felt like this was just basically part of the movie. I was a little like confused to what we were seeing as far as like.
Can I ask you an honest question?
Sure.
I know I was joking about this. Do you actually remember anything from Avatar?
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I have no memory except for they fuck with tails.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's the only thing.
Yes, I remember.
They don't fuck with tails. They hook their tails up to a tree that them. I don't know what that happened.
All right, you just explained fucking to me.
Okay. Really?
I also remember the bad guy dude had a big knife, or maybe the other guy had a big knife.
Yes, he did have a big knife.
Yeah.
I was like lightly sprayed. Yeah.
Now, I read this whole comic book, and nobody had a big knife, so I was very confused.
Very confused. It's a side story.
I got to tell you, the entire time, I was like, oh, yeah, they got those fuck braids.
Yep. See?
Are they going to fuck with the fuck braids?
And they're saving it for a later issue.
Yeah, spoilers, but they don't fuck.
I got to say, is Avatar the least rewatched major franchise movie of all time?
Wait, how many times have you seen it, Pete?
One.
What? That means it's definitely the least rewatched. Well, hold on. Let me look up Pete's schedule of viewing. Let's see. Tommy Boy, Punisher Season 1, Tommy Boy, Avatar. There it is again. You're going to see it again soon.
Oh, great. That's good news. This comic was a little hard to get into because I have no knowledge of Avatar whatsoever. The art is very nice.
Yes.
Wait, you saw the movie, though, right?
I assume.
Truly 15 years ago.
It's possible.
Okay. But I agree with you. This comic is from if you're a fan of the Avatar film and the upcoming films that have been in production for basically a child's life, you're going to love this because this picks up.
How long is that? Is that 5 years? What's a child's life?
Like a child becoming an adult, like you.
So 18?
Yeah, bingo.
Okay.
It's such a confusing, not to get too deep in a hole here, but it's such a confusing franchise because it's not the biggest movie of all time anymore, but it is one of the biggest movies of all time. The park at Disney World, everyone was like, why are you open at Avatar Land? But apparently there are hours-long lines to get in there every single day of the week, even during downtimes for the park. And like you said, they're planning 5 more movies or something like that, which is bananas insane.
Yeah, and they're like shooting them all at once. They have like, they're inventing cameras for them.
That's the only thing I know about the first one is they invented a camera.
The thing that my main takeaway from this comic almost had nothing to do with the comic other than misremembering absolutely everything in Avatar and trying to rack my brain to remember any scenes or characters. It was mostly the takeaway that those movies might actually be good, because I think everybody was like knocked off their feet by that first movie.
Yeah.
They're going to do something that's going to push it forward so that the avatars don't look like crap, which they do.
Yes, but I think everyone's just excited to see what those blue sex archers are up to.
Yeah, and you will too on January 16th. Moving on to a Dynamite book, Barbarella Deja Thoris number one. Now, I'll be honest with you, these are characters that I don't know a lot about. A long time ago, I saw the Barbarella movie. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we saw John Carter of Mars together.
Well,
John... What was it called? John Carter something?
Yeah, John Carter.
I just called John Carter.
Eventually called it. They eventually just called it John Carter. Carter. Yeah.
We did see that together.
We did see that together. Do you remember what I called it?
No, it's like better than Star Wars.
I said this generation Star Wars.
Yeah, oh, you my did. God. one of the biggest box office failures of the last 8, 10 years.
I liked the movie, though.
It was a good movie.
Yeah. Yes, it was a good movie.
As good as that.
No, it's not as good as that, but it was much more fun than people gave credit to. I really liked this book a lot.
I did too.
I thought it was great.
And this reminded me of John Carter, the movie, in a good way.
Yeah. So the art is great. The writing is great. If you don't know anything about the characters, Barbarella is sort of the weird, ditzy, but super science one. Deja Thoris is more the mystical warrior queen one.
Yeah.
And through a variety of circumstances, they end up in the same place together in this bad situation. But the panel layouts were so smart and so involving. The graphics were so clean and interesting. Certainly, even Deja Thoris, both of these characters, I think, given the covers from Dynamite, frankly, people know them for the TNA, and that's pretty much it. Deja Thoris is basically wearing a nipple suit, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter while you're
and I've worn one of those, and they are not
the comfortable. The artist does a very good job of downplaying that stuff, which I think is really nice, and making it work.
It has this sort of exotic feel of, like, a brighter Frank Frazetta painting, or, like, those exotic desert shots from an old movie or something like that. It's really nice. It feels very, like, adventurous and cool, and something that would have inspired a movie like This Generation Star Wars.
Right. It could be. Just to throw something out there. Pete, what did you think about this book?
I thought that the art was fantastic, and you're right. They kind of downplayed the sexuality in a tasteful way, which was great, because that way you could read it on the subway and no one's looking at you weird. But yeah, I thought it was...
Common problem for Pete.
You know, I just think it was one of those things where it was like, okay, but I was impressed with, I thought it was going to be one thing. I was like, oh, here we go, a little TNA comic or whatever. But I was impressed with the story, and I thought it was actually really good.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on to another one, Image Comics Die number 2. Now, we talked about the first issue of this from Kieran Gillen. I think you and I, Justin, really liked it a lot.
Yep.
Pete had some weird problems with it, but I figured it's worth revisiting. Now, the setup for the book is there's a bunch of kids created this fantasy role-playing game, got sucked into a magical land, missed 2 years of their lives, came back, one of them was missing an arm, one of them was missing, and then decades later, as adults, they're sucked back into that magical land. Turns out the person they left behind is now the games master of this land, and that's where we left off the last issue. Now, this issue, we find out a lot more about this magical land, how the quote-unquote game works, as well as the characters. I thought this was phenomenal.
I love this comic. It's such a good... They very quickly set up like a somewhat complicated premise and just really like put us there and play it out. The characters stand apart. There's all this like sort of darkness within them, and we're going to get to see them explore the world. It's like the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon that they, in their back matter of the first issue, say that it's based on. And I love that. And I love this.
Yeah. And one of the things that Kieran talks about in the back matter of this issue is he thought it would be easy to bank on the nostalgia thing of the Dungeons and Dragons at all, but he wanted to give it a twist and make it more complicated, which made it more complicated for him. But as he thought about it, and as he played around with it, and as he worked from the idea of these die that you play role-playing games with and what they would do and how they would work, he tried to weave that nostalgia factor that you're talking about from the cartoon, but give it another level. And I think it's been totally successful. Now, Pete, as the detractor here, the person who thought a little less of the first issue, how'd you feel about issue 2?
I was really impressed with the second issue. I thought they did a really good job of, like, getting to the story and getting to where they are present day and what's happening. And yeah, I was really impressed. I was less impressed with this first issue, but the second issue really turned things around for me. And I was really impressed with how they moved the story forward and the world that they were in and stuff like that. I thought it was very cool.
They got you.
Yeah.
They got you back.
This isn't exactly right, but it seems to me almost like a smarter Ready Player One, where there's all of these different video game / role-playing game tropes that they're playing off of, but the characters are aware of them, but buying into them at the same time.
They're butt buying it.
Yeah, they're butt buying. Thank you for specifying what I was trying to say. Absolutely. Moving on to another Dynamite comic, Turok number one, this reboot of the classic Dinosaur Hunter
Tale. This guy hates dinosaurs.
Does not like them. Well, in this issue, he doesn't know them yet.
Yeah.
He's just a regular guy, not hunting dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And then by the end, meets a dinosaur.
Yeah.
How did you feel about this book?
Well, this is kind of like a classic character, and it was kind of a fun take on him. We see the start, I guess, of like how he got into the dinosaur world and how that all began. Yeah, I thought this was really cool. I thought it was kind of a classic setup of a hero facing off against a bunch of villains. And yeah, I thought it was a really beautiful as far as the art matching the kind of character. And yeah, you got some like double page spread of the world that they ended up in. I thought it was good.
The addition of the little brother feels like sort of the take. I don't remember Turok having a little a family. He was always sort of on his own, sort of pretty upset and just like hunting these dinosaurs that were trying to eat him.
I know nothing whatsoever about Turok, so I was coming into this pretty clean, other than the fact that I spent three quarters of the issue saying, I thought he was Turok Dinosaur Hunter, but there's no dinosaurs in here, so maybe I was wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe this is just a Wild West cowboys and Indians type thing going on.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's cowboys and Indians and dinosaurs, as it turns out at the end.
And it may be less cowboys going forward.
No, I think there's going to be a couple of cowboys.
We'll see.
Yeah. I bet you $1 million.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that's our standard bet. That's our standard bet. We never, always high stakes.
I'm much more interested in the second issue once we get to the dinosaurs, to be frank with you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And you should actually know, we don't know if dinosaurs ate humans because they weren't around, evolutionarily speaking, at the same time. Dinosaurs may have been our greatest friends.
I'm sorry, you haven't seen a Jurassic Park movie ever?
Yeah, that is true.
Okay.
What about a little documentary humans called Flintstones Viva Rock Vegas?
That's true. Both great films, and thank you for reminding me to catch up on my nonfiction film work.
Yep. Another Image Comics book that is out today, Gunning for Hits, number one. And I guarantee you, this is the only book that you will read all week that has a major plot point whether somebody should suck somebody else's dick.
Well, let's see how the rest of the books go. This book was pretty wild. It was like going to school a little bit about music, the music industry.
So this is somebody who is a veteran of the music industry. Essentially, it's taken up with, I guess, an agent.
An A&R person.
A&R person, thank you. Trying to sign a hot young band that only he knows about and will do anything to get them on.
Yeah.
But the entire middle of the issue, for pages and pages, is taken up with explaining how the record industry works and how they take advantage of artists with cutesy little cartoons. This book is bizarre. I don't hate it, but I wasn't even sure if I liked it most of the time I was reading it, but it was certainly interesting and different.
Yeah, it definitely is different. And because it is, even in the parts before we get to the pictographic stuff detailing how the music industry works, it is a lot of like, it's 1987. MTV is big. There's a ton of money in the market. This guy's really good. He has four number one hits. Here's how he made them. Here's how I'm going to take advantage of them. So it really is like a primer on like the 80s music industry, to the detriment of really learning much about the characters.
Right.
But I am. It ends with him like pulling some guns out, which I was like, wait, what's this? And it's gonna be, I feel like it's sort of a mobbed up 80s the TV show Vinyl. Did you ever watch that failed TV show from HBO a couple years ago?
Yeah,
it reminded me of that a little bit, where it's like, what is all this? So I am curious. I would pick up the next issue of this.
What about you, Pete? How'd you feel about this?
So this to me was like, it started off and I was like, this is gonna be one of Zeldman's weird sex comics, because there's a lot of talk about dick sucking. But
size.
That you're aside. Talking, of course, about the comics that Alex meticulously hand draws and writes that are about a young man's journey into the world of
Fellatio. It did make me miss the good old days.
Let me know, by the way, if you want any characters to suck each other's dicks or anything like that. I'm happy to draw you a comic.
Okay, great. It did make me miss the good old days of like.
Sorry,
MTV.
Just real quick. Your Spider-Man Batman order should be here anytime soon.
Cool.
What about my Batman Spider-Man?
Anyways, it reminded me of the good old days when MTV actually played music videos. Minutes. Miss that show.
120 minutes. You couldn't sound more old if you tried on an episode where we've talked about how youthful and fresh you are.
Yep.
What does the M even stand for, man?
Yeah, but it just, this comic does a lot of explaining, which it's, I don't, does that, is that ever really going to come into play in this comic? I don't know, but it just does a lot of explanation for like a fun reveal that after all that, I'm like, I don't know if it was worth it. But it's very creative. It's kind of a fun setting, a fun backdrop. So I'm interested to see where this goes. I was just a little disappointed where we put all of our energy in this issue.
I mean, listen, this is the first book from this guy that he's ever done, not Mortat, who's the artist, who's done a bunch of stuff with Jimmy Palmiotti and other people. Yeah. So I'm willing to grade on a curve for this. Yeah. I think the dialogue was a little stilted throughout, but there's enough weirdness. And as you point to, the thing at the end
back
is so strange.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It's kind of going to be fascinating to at least check out the second issue and see what happens.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to another Marvel title, Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man number one. Now, this is Tom Taylor, one of our favorite writers here, I think, on the podcast.
Love Tom
Taylor. Definitely really building up in the critical and fan community, doing his take on Spider-Man. Tell you what, not so friendly, this book. Kind of sad at points, actually.
And interestingly, way focused on the neighborhood.
Yeah.
It's like neighborhood Spider-Man friendly, if the order of what we're getting.
Yeah, here. Absolutely. But what did you think about this book?
So there are two stories here, dividing it in half once again, which is one of Pete's favorite things, clearly. And it's sort of like, I wasn't quite sure. This is a book where I was like, who has an agenda? Who's doing what? Because Peter Parker is knocked unconscious at one point, and it felt like there's a mystery element here, it felt like to me, that it isn't pointed to in a way where I knew exactly what was happening.
I really like the backup story in particular.
That seemed the least, that was sad.
It was super sad. I'm saying, when I say I like something, I'm saying it was well done, not it was great and it made me feel great. Made me feel super bad, but I feel the way that was written, the darkness of that really punched me in the gut. The first story, to your point, it felt like everything is going on in Amazing Spider-Man. It was recapping a bunch of that and maybe adding a couple of other details. But Tom Taylor is good enough that I'm curious to follow him on the journey he goes on.
We don't quite get the full take on Spider-Man here, except for the focus on who's living in Peter Parker's building and the rest of his neighborhood.
Yeah, I thought the first story was a lot better than the second one, but it started off pretty heartbreaking where that girl's trying to squash Spider-Man, like she basically punches his chest because he's got a spider on it, and that was a fucked up moment. And then
guess
as
found
Peter
the
Parker
super
like goes away, she's like, "I'm gonna get you." I'm like, "Damn, that's
what?
A little
that
evil
hilarious.
Kid." No, that's the start of a supervillain.
No,
you're
it's
worried
not.
About Peter Parker's his future.
Yeah, yeah, because that little kid seems determined to squash him.
Yeah,
I think you read that.
Also, there's creepy kids in a wastebasket, which I don't like at all. That really freaks me out.
Yeah, was there no creepy kids in your wastebasket?
No.
What? Wait, what about you?
Yeah. Oh, I have definitely creepy kids all over my house.
Oh, okay.
I'm lousy with creepy kids.
All right, last one to talk about before we wrap up. Batman number 62 from Detective Comics Comics. This is the second part of the Nightmare storyline.
Yes.
Batman, last we left him in the real world, his dad, dressed in the Flashpoint Batman suit, was behind him. And this issue, suddenly he's being confronted by Professor Pig. This is by Tom King and Mitch Gerards, and it feels like a lost issue of Miracle Man. Straight up.
Def.
Which is not a bad thing at all in my book, but it's definitely very different from what we've had going on in Batman so far.
Now, is Professor Pig officially in the Batman Rogues Gallery?
Sure.
Like, yes. Because that's got to be like the newest sort of big
also,
villain.
Also, Professor Pig is in Gotham, the TV show. So
yeah.
Yeah, but I'm saying, I actually think Pete has a point there because
cool.
I think
suck it.
Beyond the fact that
that's one point.
Morrison invented him. It was like, oh, this is a weird Grant Morrison thing that nobody gets, and it's fine. Yeah. And then people kept using him in the comics, which certainly helped cement him. But he's been on the animated shows now. He's been on Gotham. He's been in other media, and I do think that has cemented him at least for the modern era as somebody who is in the Rogues Gallery. Probably not the level of the Joker or Mr. Freeze or Two-Face or anything like that.
Well, how many Professor Pig movies are they making at Warner Brothers right now?
There's the Professor Pig origin movie. There's Professor Pig's and the Oink Oinks, which is a team-up movie.
It's sort of a musical.
Yeah. And then five more.
There's a Professor Pig in the City, I believe, is coming out.
Yeah.
It's going to be good. Sort of cute.
But very underrated.
Yeah. I say that because I feel like I think that's very cool. It's very rare when a new villain really enters the canon. And I think that Professor Pig really has.
Yeah. How did you feel about this book, though?
The last page, I'm very curious about what that means, because I think we're dealing with a generational something bad happened generationally for our Batman.
Yeah. I am also very, very curious. I really like the ending a lot. This storyline is going to be going on for a while. I believe it's 7 parts total, and it's going to be interrupted by a 2-parter crossover with The Flash that's going to be separate, I believe, and outside the continuity. So it's going to be almost a year until we really figure out what is going on with Batman and what's happened to him. And that's super interesting to me personally.
Yeah.
Pete, I can tell from your expression, you are also super interested.
Yeah.
I'm pretty pissed about this issue. I would be super, super pissed if I spent money on this and then got to the last panel, because I fucking hate when that shit happens, when you're confused the whole time and then the reveal happens and you're like, fuck you.
Oh.
Fuck you for wasting my fucking time.
Oh, you should never go see any magician then, because that's literally the whole thing. Also, any story in all of pop culture.
It's an amazing team, so it looked amazing, but it was pretty upsetting and a fucking big waste of time.
See, I disagree completely. I'm very excited by that reveal at the end, and I think Tom King is one of a writer we can truly trust, I believe.
He's an amazing writer, and
yeah,
the artist
you don't trust him. You don't trust him.
How could you trust him after this?
Because
this issue has nothing to do with anything moving forward.
Remember when you? That's definitely not true. Remember when you didn't like Mr.
it
Miracle?
It was a waste of a fucking.
Remember when you didn't like Mr. Miracle? And then where did you end up?
I'm going to throw it out to you. This is definitely not a waste of an issue. We just don't know how it fits into the overall puzzle yet.
Yeah, and maybe if you could get off your phone and stop just sending us emojis all the time, you could really like take a look at the world around you, because you're gonna go to college someday and you're gonna learn, and then eventually you're gonna have a job like Alex and I.
A bunch of lies, and then have a shitty job that I won't like. You know what? Fuck you, Dad. I don't have to live your life.
Don't leave out your other dad.
Yeah, fuck you.
Thanks. Wow, I think you just turned 18. Guys, if you want to support our show, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. at the People's Improv Theater Loft in New York that's totally free. Come on by. We'll chat about comic books. Pete, what else do you want to plug?
Friend us on Facebook so you get to know about the amazing guests we have on our live show.
Follow us on Twitter at Comic Book Live.
Check us out at comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And we'll see you at the comic book shop. Pete, get off of your phone.
Off your phone, Pete.
Screw you, Dad.
Put it down. You've had your screen time for the day.
Pick up all of the underwear you've left around our podcast studio.